Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on iTunes and Stitcher and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, it's Monday, October 20th. This is our
93rd.
Yep.
93rd episode.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Who said that? Anyway, before we get to who said that, we're going to talk about a couple things that are coming up here in New York. We are incredibly excited to host Charlie Papazian, the godfather, the man who wrote The Complete Joy of Home Brewing and who is responsible largely for the community of brewers that we have in the United States today. It's pretty amazing the things that he has achieved, the people he's brought together, and the knowledge that he continuously shares. And he has just put out the fourth edition of The Complete Joy of Homebrewing, and he's visiting us in New York at 508 Gastro Brewery on Tuesday, October 28th at 6:30. We're going to have a happy hour and a hangout with him, and I'm going to play some music around 8 o'clock, and hopefully he might even play a little bongos. I'll believe it when I see it. And then the following day, he will be at Bitter and Esther's homebrew store, where they will have a homebrew swap with the man himself.
Yep. So the homebrew swap is actually going to start at 6, and then Charlie will be at the store from 7 to 8:30.
Right on.
Oh, otherwise, this Friday is the official start of New York City Cider Week. So it goes from October 24th through November 2nd. There are a ton of awesome events going on. Go to CiderWeekNYC.com to find out more. One in particular of note is our good friend Jimmy Carboni of Beer Sessions Radio, also a show also on Heritage Radio Network, is helping put together Cider Feast at the South Street Seaport. So there are two sessions. That's this Saturday, the October 25th. And you can go to, actually, if you just Google Cider Feast NYC, you'll be able to find out. And tickets are now available on Eventbrite.
That is very exciting. I love Cider Week. It's one of the happiest weeks of the year.
Oh, also, one other thing. Also at Bitter and Esther's, there's a community apple press day this Sunday, October 26th, at the store from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So I think they have all the slots to actually have your apples pressed are filled, but they're going to be hosting Joy and Jeremy from Proper Cider, who we've had on the show before, as well as Andy Brennan from Aaron Burr Cider. So that's going to be from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Drop by. You can hang out and watch how apples get pressed, as well as meet and greet with Joy, Jeremy, and Andy.
They are both a wealth of knowledge, an awesome cider, and with Aaron Burr there, that's just to hang out. It's going to be great. It's going to be totally fun. But what happened yesterday? Yesterday was Pickle Day in Lower East Side in New York City. Today is our first all-out pickle show, and we have our very special guest, Seamus Jones from Brooklyn Brine.
Hello.
And
Elena.
I'm sorry, Elena. Operations manager from Brooklyn Brine. We're totally excited to have you guys here. First of all, tell us a little bit about Pickle Fest. You guys participated in it, and we stopped by you guys, and it was pretty crazy.
The Lower East Side Pickle Festival is an annual organized celebration of, you know, not only the history and heritage of pickles in New York City, but also local manufacturers, and then kind of in a larger scale outside of the region, other just pickle manufacturers that are respected in the industry. And then there's also been an increased presence of restaurants and kind of what chefs are, representing in their own individual brick and mortars with their own creative ideas with pickles and how that folds into dishes and composed plates.
And it's definitely been seeing a lot of popularity.
Yeah.
It was kind of crazy. So that was the fifth year of the Pickle Day?
It was the fifth year for us. I mean, it's been happening probably somewhere closer to 10 years. It had a kind of in the past, it was organized by this woman named Nancy with the Lower East Side Tenement Museum, who at a certain point wanted to pass it on. It kind of grew beyond her capacity, and it was handed off to Robert with the New Amsterdam Market, and moved down to the South Street Seaport and the Peck Slip area down there, and worked and just kind of proved that how it didn't work is that it should always be in the Lower East Side. So right. A celebration of the history and kind of heritage, what I was touching on a second ago with the whole design of the festival. And then 2 years ago, we had Sandy happen, so right. It actually didn't happen. And on the back end, we were trying to help kind of give it a home. So we were even offering, like, have it in our factory. And I remember the feedback was like, well, it's not on the Lower East Side. And we're like, well, who cares? Let's just have it.
Right. You know? Don't let it not happen.
So I would say, though, this year was definitely the biggest that we've participated in, and just an absolute, you know, it's always a joy, but this year, I don't know, it was beyond words.
Yeah, right?
Really
it
busy.
Was nuts. And you guys were incredibly popular.
Crush, kill,
amazing.
Destroy.
How did you get into pickling? What, I mean, that was just one day in your life, man.
I mean, the long and short of it is, you know, really, I've always worked with food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've only worked in restaurants, and I worked my way from a dishwasher to executive chef, got burnout working in kind of that format, did some consulting work, and then just touched in what was my drive and where my passion was. And it was, you know, culinary artistry, creative intention, and then I haven't eaten meat for over half my life, so the idea of preserving seasonal and micro-seasonal produce really kind of tied all of that together. And you know, that epiphany of that you can have all those elements in a jarred item and share it with the world. I mean, certainly that wasn't the original intention, because I didn't have a business plan, but you know, just that I can give this to you. You can take it to your grandmama in Idaho and she can find out what a pickled garlic scape is, you know, with sour, salty, sweet, savory, spicy, and whatever fun little adjunct ingredients we can put into it.
So what was the first pickle that you guys launched with?
I think it's our deli style. It's hard to remember, though. I mean, there was a lot of just like, oh, you know, not to paint ourselves into a contrived we can pickle it kind of Portlandia reference. But really, that was the beginning of my company, was just whatever seasonal produce, whatever we can get our hands in, we're going to mm-hmm. prove to you that there's something more that we can do with it. So it's either the deli style or garlic scape, but I really think the first night probably actually was the deli style. And that's certainly what we've continuously offered to the market and was our best seller for years until the whiskey sour finally came in and eclipsed that.
How would you define deli style?
Deli style is just an everyday kind of pickle. And how I define my company is that, you know, we're trying to show that pickled items offer sour, salty, sweet, savory, spicy, and that you can fold that into dishes, and really from that more like chef in a brick and mortar kind of mentality, how this will, you add the, a pickled item and it'll cut through kind of the monochromatic flavors of a rich and fatty dish. How we define our deli style is like, all right, look, you got to have an everyday thing. It's what people, it's what the market wants. You got to listen to the market. But we wisely kind of switch out ingredients and attenuate it to our own personal preference and palate. Like mm-hmm. I can't stand distilled vinegar, or distilled white vinegar. We use apple cider vinegar. It's got this really, you know, hand selected, balanced spice blend that goes into it that has caraway seed that's not in the common pickling spice that you can buy in a market. And then just little fun tricks that we do on our end of cooking in certain ingredients into the brine that are flavor profiles we want to isolate and really like heighten. So for instance, there's a shit ton of garlic that goes into that brine that we're cooking, so it evenly distributes that flavor profile and really controls it.
How do you make a brine for a pickle?
Well, that's an interesting question, because we're on this ferment about it. And, you know, brine is just a loose reference to we're preserving something,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a liquid. So the spectrum can go from a salt and water brine through fermentation which we actually brought our garlic dill half sour that you can only get in our storefront attached to our factory, 574 President Street, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, all the way to our main line of what we wholesale and what's really 99.9% of our business, which is the acidifying a low-acid food through a thermal process. So that's a vinegar-based brine, got to have salt for flavor, fun adjunct ingredients like 60-minute IPA from Dogfish Head Brewery or rye whiskey from Finger Lakes Distilling. But really, it's suspending that organic raw produce that's in the jar and also giving it all the flavor, meaning a cucumber is kind of a blank canvas in its raw format. But when we put it into a brine, it yields a different experience.
How long does it take generally? What is the shelf life? Or how long does it take for a pickle to become a pickle? A cucumber to become a pickle?
Well,
and how do brines affect
In our factory, you know, we, because quality is such a huge focus, like we're representing a premium to the brand, not a preciousness, meaning, you know, it's not, we're not putting out like $50 designer pickles or I love that friends of mine, colleagues in and around Brooklyn, friends that have other companies, like they're kicking around this thing, this kind of like response where it's like, it's not a fucking art project. You know, it's like, we love this. We do this every day. So anyway, I digress. For us, you know, we get the produce in, and by the end of the shift, 8, 9, 10 hour shift, depending on the
Elena, is this you doing
how cranked we are. Well, as an operations manager, she's really, you know, seamlessly orchestrating and directing this theatrical process of like raw product coming in the morning.
It's pretty, everyone's really impressed with when they come to our factory, see the size of it. See the size of our crew. We have about 6 people, not including myself, in the back pumping out just jars of pickles and really just having a fun time doing it. The conversations are ridiculous. They're usually involving what
shit I overheard in the pickle factory.
Yeah, we're going to start that up. But so yeah, it's kind of amazing. And, you know, just to go back to your original question, a jar of pickles basically, once it gets cooled and labeled, you could really open it the next day and it has some flavor to it. You know, it's going to take a little bit longer than that. That's why we rotate everything. But those pickles could be good within a couple of days. Yeah.
So that's all within the 8 hour window, 9 hour window, 10 hour window, whatever that day runs of production. But, you know, to finish Alina's thought, after that shift is over, how it gets better is osmosis. The salts drawing in the brine, pulling out the liquid that the cucumbers retain, and really giving that blank slate, that blank canvas, all the flavors.
At what point is a half sour not a half sour anymore?
Well, what is a half sour, first of all? Because
that's
there's
totally fucking subjective. You guys want to talk about fermentation? All right, here we go. So, a half sour is a live cultured, you know, probiotic rich, gut beneficial, blah, blah, blah. We've had Sandor Katz in our factory, which is a great pleasure and honor, you know, the revivalist for fermentation, and also at our restaurant. I was mentioning to you, Chris, when we were talking the other day on the phone, that we filmed for this television program that we still, at this point, haven't even seen a year ago when Sandor was in there. But that brine, which is where we'll start on what makes a half sour, is really the brine. So that's that sea salt and water. And the sea salt inhibits bad microbial growth that sits on the skin of the actual raw produce that we're fermenting, because it doesn't have to just be cucumbers. Okay. But by definition, also half sour probably is a cucumber-based, Lower East Side kosher dill. There you go. Our fermentation vessel is oak bourbon barrels that we get from Finger Lakes Distilling. And then when it dips down to kind of smaller batches, or depending on the time of the year and how hot it is in our factory, because fermentation is also temperature sensitive and the salinity of the brine controls how fast or how sour things get. We use crocks that are just more conducive to the quality of the product that we're trying to push out. But the half sour is, again, under that subjective, it's a texture, it's a taste, it's a smell. And really, the nature of a live cultured fermented item is that conversation and that interaction you're having with it daily. You're going in, you're skimming off the wild yeast that's collecting at the top. You're making sure that it's still crisp. You're tasting how far along it is.
Cool. Yeah, because so I grew up in the Midwest, and I didn't know anything past dill pickles and bread and butter pickles, I think. Like, I don't think half sours don't exist in my childhood. So it was kind of a, you know, I didn't know. I was exposed. I mean, I think pickles are a lot more popular nowadays anyway, but New York City pickles, there have been a great variety of pickles anyway.
But I think, like, you know, depending on where you're from in the Midwest, and we don't have to necessarily get into that, but
right.
The large Eastern European community
true.
And the diaspora of that, and that's kind of like, you know, the great thing about pickles is it represents this, like, really kind of familial thing, and it's so cross-cultural, and every walk of life has it in their DNA, and that's fermentation, and that's the half sours. So whether it was branded Lower East Side, kosher dill, New York deli, whatever, you were probably having it.
Right. I just didn't know. I had never heard that term, I guess, terminology.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back to talk more, particularly about hot pickles. I want to learn
and
more
how
about
you
those.
Get your flavors in these guys.
Yeah, and also about the Pickle Shack.
So cheers.
Stay tuned.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, I'm Reggie Watts, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. As Reggie Watts said, I love Reggie Watts, by the way. Check him out. We are here in the studio with our friends from Brooklyn Brine, Seamus Jones and Ilana, the operations manager.
Elena.
I did that twice. But that
we are very good at
mispronunciation.
We're very good at mispronunciation, particularly names here. So talk about, you've got two pickles in front of you. Talk a little bit about these.
Well, we also have beer. And
that's true.
We've been neglecting to mention
that.
Brooklyn Brine also has an extension in DNA and personality and so on and so forth with our restaurant Pickle Shack on 4th
yes.
Avenue around the corner from our factory.
Yes, yes.
7 days a week, 12 p.m. till 10 p.m.
What's the website?
PickleShackNYC.com. There's a www in there somewhere.
Right on. Right on. And you guys are the jerks that open right next to Brooklyn Brine. Right?
Oh, my God. Yeah. So I know you're touching on that story where we get guests coming into our storefront being like, yo, who are these pickle people around the corner from you? What's their problem? It's us.
It's us, actually.
It's us.
There's no competition.
Da, da, da.
But what is Pickle Shack? So
Pickle Shack is a full-service restaurant. It's not just pickles. Have a heavy emphasis on our relationship with the Almighty Dogfish Head Brewery.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Draft lines dedicated to them, and then Sam sending up rare and esoteric. Well, everything they do is esoteric, but vintage beer, hence why I brought the 2009 120 minute.
Yes.
Super elusive. Sweet. And making all you beer nerds jealous out there. We're about to pop it open.
You should totally be here.
Beyond that, really... You know, it's a furthering kind of who we are and what we're about in the market. So quality, innovation, and cleanliness of product, that's totally translated into the full service aspect of the food that we're serving. And then also, again, the beer relationships. All scratch, all in-house, all local, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, those are things that are actually really important to us. It's just totally beating a dead horse at this point, hopefully, especially considering the demographic that's listening to this,
right.
You know, it's vegetarian, really apprehensive to even mention that now. I don't want to alienate any guests to think like, well, I eat meat and I really enjoy it. Well, 99% of, the guests that come in through our doors do not realize it's vegetarian. We do not advertise it. We do not push it in that sense. And they enjoy the meal. And it's kind of this afterthought, like, oh, whoa. Oh, I didn't even know.
But you have these amazing pickled palate parties going on that are beer infused and share a lot of commonalities, like this hot pickle.
What's up
with the hot pickle?
Hot pickles are collaboration with, again, the Almighty Dogfish Head Brewery. It's beer and Cascade hop infused. The beer is the 60-minute IPA. That's the second ingredient. That's why we have a one-ton keg of 60-minute at our factory at Altamont.
How much of it makes it into the pickles?
It's denatured with sea salt is how we have the direct manufacturer-to-manufacturer kind of connection. So we get this UPS freight forwarder driver that pulls up to our factory and swears at us for either beer that's spilled out in transit or the fact that it weighs one ton and it's not on a pallet.
His name is Tim Brown.
He does not like us.
No, he loves us. He's great.
He does not like seeing the keg, though.
Yeah, well.
And then...
So you said hop infused. Are you infusing the brine with that and also
using
that? Yeah,
which is a really cool, like, for the nerds out there... the nature of how we're working with Dogfish is...
Enthusiasts, he meant. He meant enthusiasts.
Nerds. you know, Sammy Lumley, out of the blue in 2012, introducing himself and the company. And it's like, I know who you are. I was actually reading his book, Brewing Up a Business. But the whole nature of that email was that they had this idea to put hops into pickles. They don't make pickles. Would we want to play? You know, would we want to, like, test it out and see if we can work together? And... the conversation just moved to the actual like R&D immediately. So Sam was generous enough to send up pelletized whole leaf and then hop oil and all of the beers that they had in the market at that point for us to play around with.
That's a lot.
A lot of beer. Yeah. I'm not a home brewer and I've never worked with hops before, ever. Mm-hmm. And the like Amarillo hops were so amazing on the front end. But then when I was throwing them into the brine, that bitter afternote, it just wasn't working. And I would have had to put in all this adjunct, you know, something to offset that bitterness, the sweetness, you know, like tons of sugar, you know. In the package that Sam sent, there was this little teeny vial, about half an inch tall, of Cascade hop oil. And the note was like, if we were to use this in our brewery, this would yield 100 cases. And mind you, the package that I got is of retail bottles, 12-ounce and 22-ounce, or 750, sorry, that I'm doing testers with. So it's like this little vial.
The smallest just, thing in there.
Oh my, is the most powerful thing you could ever imagine.
Yep.
And after going through about 50 different testers that were the most disgusting things we've ever turned out because of that bitter afternote. Yeah. And mind you, when we come up with an idea, and Elena, you know, you should speak on that, especially like the herb cauliflower that you came up with, where... We think of it, and because we do this every day, because we're vertical, because all the manufacturing's in house, we can dial it out. You know, we might have two passes at something, and it's perfected. This hot pickle just wasn't working, and literally had to take a pin and put it in the vial and do a little like pin drop into the brine, and that's how the hops are actually folded in.
And that's coming in.
The hop oil is the essential oil of the Cascade hops that's distilled down, and it's a really pure ingredient, but it just removes the bitter afternote and allows for the aroma and the citrusy, piney flavors on the front end.
Cool.
Love that. You mentioned the your recipe.
The herbed cauliflower.
The herbed cauliflower.
Yes.
Where'd that pickled come from? Jalapenos, the jardinera. I mean, so many ideas Elena's contributed.
Yeah, I think it's just working in kitchens and really being passionate about food. And that's a good background to have when you're creating anything. And I mean, just the herbed cauliflower is kind of like Thanksgiving in a jar. There's sage and thyme, caramelized onions. It's super savory. And it's kind of really popular.
But how rad is that to have a coworker with the company who's operations manager who has an idea and understands their palate and then can translate it into this jarred format. And that's what's up now. That like
in the beginning, it was all your recipes or
absolutely
from your brain.
And that's the most boring fucking shit at this point. Like, I don't care. I want quality, innovation, and cleanliness of product.
And you guys are a team now with six people in the shop?
On the floor. Yeah. On the production floor. Cool. Doing 10,000 jars a week.
That's nuts.
Mind blowing. All by hand.
Where do all 10,000 go?
Elena?
Well,
you were doing the purchase orders this morning?
I mean, probably nationwide are Whole Foods. mm-hmm. nationwide.
It's one of our biggest nationwide
one
accounts.
Of our biggest accounts. The past year, we've picked up Marks & Spencer in the UK. We just, today I got an email. They're putting us in 221 more stores,
wow.
picking up two more SKUs. That the same distributor has us in Woolworths in South Africa with five SKUs.
Oh, that's amazing.
So it's kind of, it's funny though, because our maple bourbon bread and butter has to be called Sweet Maple Bourbon Gherkins in the UK. Yeah.
The concept of a bread and butter doesn't translate over there. That right. The gherkin is something that hits closer to home.
Yeah.
Which and is actually ironic, because in Europe, Cornichon, I know England's not Europe, but Cornichon is the little pickle, and then mm-hmm. domestically we call it gherkin, and then somehow yeah. that bounces back to England. Where...
Yeah, and I mean, even with all of these larger accounts, we're still doing local deliveries 2 days a week. We're mom and pop stores all over the place, local restaurants, bars.
And these are all out of your one location.
Well, yeah, the
and
one
how,
factory.
What is your footprint? How big is it on 4th Avenue?
2,300 square feet.
Yeah, so that's not very big at all.
It
but
sucks.
International,
it's a lot
crazy.
Of pallet Tetris is
pallet
what we
Tetris
call it.
Pallet Tetris sucks.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But the vibe, and you kind of touched on, but just to further the thought, is the core, like, one of the key core fundamentals of the company is that we're vertical, and there's no option at this point of contracting out any manufacturing. And my philosophy is, like, if we can't make it ourselves, we don't deserve to sell it. And there's a lot of, like, back end in terms of defending that strain that you're putting on the infrastructure. Like, we can't do a 100,000 jar order for I don't give a fuck who you are, because that's going to kill our coworkers.
Right.
And the whole, like, where we're leading off talking to Elena is, like, check it out. This company has far surpassed anything that I would have ever imagined possible for us to be able to achieve. And it's now on the backs, and the burden is, you know, amortized across the whole company, where mm-hmm. it's teams. We're going at it. We're fucking killing it all together. And pardon my French, but I feel very strongly about this. And
cool.
In the beer world, in order to put a beer out on the market, we have to register with the TTB, the names, and sometimes if
we should
it
also
uses,
pour this 120 minute as
well,
we're talking
yes,
about
okay.
it.
before we can put it out, how hard is it to get a new product to market as a pickler? Or do you have any sort of approval kind of things?
It depends. So if we're talking about the ferment about it side of things,
right.
You know, through fermentation in our in-house only offerings at our storefront, which is where the fermentation goes out, Ag and Markets is contracted out by the FDA, so that's our governing force. So a restaurant, maybe most people can understand this, is Department of Health. Manufacturing, we have Ag and Markets, and in New York City, those are the people that the FDA is employing, because they don't have enough people to go to all the different, you know, manufacturers that are in the city. Ag and Markets says fermentation, because when we want the fermentation to slow down almost to a complete halt, it has to be removed out of the danger zone. We put it in the refrigerator. So we don't need to have what's called a scheduled process, testing the minutiae of all the ingredients and details in our process and recipe and weights and measurements, so on and so forth. Our jarred item that's in an anaerobic state with a hermetic seal, so no oxygen, lowering the pH level, inhibiting any kind of pathways for bad microbes to go in and spoil and make people sick. Everything has to be tested. Mm-hmm. So again, the scheduled process, and that's done. Our Food Venture Science Centers with Cornell up in Geneva, New York, depending on the time of year, the turnaround time for a new recipe is a little longer than our patients as creators and innovators can kind of withstand. So we're like, we'll come up with something. We're so fucking excited about it. And we shoot it off, and then we got to wait. And we got to wait, yep. And we got to wait. And then we have to also, you know, get labels printed, which take a time. So I think over the years, we've just become more accustomed to the nature of what it takes to put out a new product and
just yeah.
all that goes into that.
I was fascinated by that, but when it comes to fermentation, when do you stop it, and how do you stop it as a pickler kind of thing? And you mentioned that you just get it cold, but then when you take it out of the cold, what does that mean for anybody if it's on the shelf?
Well, that would never break that chain.
You said you only sold it in your store, right? You're fermented?
Yes, but I mean, in the, let's say, food service side, and then Green Grape Provisions in Fort Greene, like I remember specifically, we've actually given them our labeled jars, just like kind of testing it out in the beginning. But that supply chain of from when it's finished on our end and how we know is, again, subjective, which we mentioned earlier, like that's ready, that's a half sour. You come into our store, it's like, that's not a half sour. This is a half sour. You know, like we hear that every day. It's just, there's no. But once we decide it's done and we put it in our walk-in, our refrigerator, a distributor needs to come and pick it up. Our own trucks need to go out. That needs to be refrigerated. And then when it hits retail, that also needs to be refrigerated. So kind of why we choose to go with this citified thermal process, which I know you're not asking, but just to all this full circle, please. Is like we can grow and scale on this side, the vinegar, and you know, not only is it a kind of a celebrated preference company-wise, because it's such an exact, every jar tastes the same.
We
fucking love it. And the fermentation is such a fun, wild, but like we don't want our name behind that if we're trying to mass craft it. You know, I don't want to have 1,000 emails about, well, this is what I think a half sour is. It's like, stop it. You know?
You also expressed the other day fetishizing fermentation.
I think so. I'm not trying to upset anyone. I believe in it. And truth be told, you know, our apple cider vinegar, not only does every apple that goes into making it come from an upstate orchard, it's devoid of any adjunct ingredients, just apples, vinegar. There you go. It's run through, it comes in this 1-ton tote. Have you ever seen a 1-ton
apple cider
vinegar? Actually, everything we get comes in a 1-ton format. We get a 1-ton tote of 60-minute IPA direct from Dogfish Head Brewery. Our cucumbers come in 1-ton bins. Our vinegar, 1-ton, so on and so forth. But the manufacturer, Fleischmann's, runs it through a centrifuge that removes the mother. So basically, the contributor to continually fermenting it. So they get it to, like, this is the grain, our acidity, as the more on the retail level you would see it advertised as, and it stops. So it can sit at room temperature. Mm-hmm. It's not any kind of special. It's in a space bag. It's like a big space bag of wine that you would drink when you're
a bladder.
A bladder. Bladder of apple cider vinegar. Yes. Yeah, that's cool. But I mean, so regardless, even if you know, even your jarred products that are done in a brine, they're made with fermented. I mean, apple cider vinegar is fermented.
I think, you know, again, like in response to the fetishization, this 120 is really strong.
and delicious.
Is it, you know, I like from Sandor's mouth, there's only so much pro-beneficial gut probiotics that your body can absorb. And then beyond that, it's just like, man, look at this ingredients list. It's the cleanest thing you've ever seen. There's no corn syrup or calcium chloride or sodium benzenite or emulsifiers or any kind of air quotes flavors. This is just, you read it, you understand it. It's good for you, eat it. Yeah. Look at the nutritional diagram on the side. We're not going to, you know, kill you with massive amounts of sodium or any kind of fat.
It's vegetables and vinegar. And flavors.
Fruits.
Yeah. Fruits.
There's seeds in the cucumber. You know, same principle. That it's a clean product. Yeah. Doesn't have to be fermented. But the vinegar is fermented. Yeah.
Well, I don't necessarily drink or eat fermented products for the health benefits. I think they're delicious generally. And, you know. Yeah. And like you said, vinegar. They preserve. I mean, they're preservative. That's the whole point of, I mean, part of the whole point of fermentation, right?
I might have had like a fermentitude right there.
Nice.
I can't stress enough. I love that we can dump a shit ton of 60-minute IPA or rye whiskey or cook habaneros in the brine when it's our damn spicy or any of these more controlled kind of in defense of creative intention, you know, that we can share with the world. And then it can be exact every time when we're doing the acidified thermal process. Yeah. Fermentation, come in and eat the shit out of our fermented pickles in our store, 574 President Street, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
What's the nearest train?
What's that?
What's the nearest train?
Union R.
Gotcha.
Carol G. Go for it. But, you know, I think that we fully embrace the full spectrum, but what's worked for us and how we've carved out our niche in the market and where we sit with it and what we're confident with is the, you know, the certified side.
I love it. And by focusing on consistency, you're doing your clientele a great service.
Yeah.
Yep, that's true. Absolutely.
All that, the premium of the brand, you know, there's nothing precious beyond it. It's just, this is the hardest job you can imagine, but we love it. Mm-hmm. And we're not gluttons for punishment. It's just like, believe in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool. And also, the Pickle Shack. I mean, you can go drink craft beer and eat all kinds of delicious.
It's like,
food.
You know, you want to know the most fucked up thing about that is? Is that you sit back and you're like, where would I hang out every night if I could? This would be the greatest idea. Let's share it with the world. And then you bring it to market, and then you realize as an owner, you actually can't be there. Because then you're that
you're
dude.
Too busy. You got to do.
No. Because then you're that dude. You know, craft beer and your favorite food and all your friends working there. But you can't hang out there. You can't celebrate it in that way. Well, you have to be that parent that, you know, on the back end.
It's like,
but at least everybody else can enjoy.
Yeah. And oh my God, just it's insane. October 30th is going to be our 1 year. Actually, technically, October 21st, Sam came up from Dogfish and we did a 5-course just for him. Like, you know, something that'll go down in the books that when Heidi and I have grandchildren at some point, mm-hmm. we're going to be telling them, like, oh, yeah, Sam was there the first time. But really, we opened our doors to the public October 30th and not even a year in market and how just much people love it and how many people have been through there and, you know, it's
awesome.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Cool. Beer and pickles. Have my heart.
Yeah, I would agree.
We used to host a lot of beer and pickles and chocolate and beer and pickles and cheese food and beer pairings at Jimmy's lot on the way back.
But, Jimmy, good dude.
Great dude.
By the way.
Great dude. Beer sessions Tuesdays at 5.
He's always very pro. Anytime I see him like in any kind of event or whatnot, it's always, of course, beer-centered, but mm-hmm. he always like remembers, like, how's that place going? That thing you're doing with Dogfish? That pickle?
In his pink jacket, rolling around, jolly guy. Well, dude, thank you so much for joining us today, man. It's been awesome hanging with you.
Dudes.
Elena. Elena, I got it. So
if you want to learn more about Brooklyn Brine, and you guys have online sales too, right? BrooklynBrine.com?
We actively try and push those down and push it out to other, you know, people that have been supporters of us. We're manufacturers first and foremost, so you can go to BrooklynBrine.com and find out where to buy the pickles or come direct to our store. But
cool. BrooklynBrine.com.
I fucked up your flow there, didn't
no,
I?
No, that's totally fine.
Brooklyn Brine to find out where the pickles
after
are.
This,
and then you want
after
to visit,
this glass of 120, I don't think I have a flow.
There's no flow after Dogfish Head 120, except to flow deliciousness.
So thank you very much. I want to remind you that Cider Week starts in New York City this Friday, and we're planning a cider show for next Monday. We're not exactly sure what kind, we'll be talking cider.
Talking cider. For men about it. Thank you very much again. Yep. Hit the
Cheers.
Pickle Shack and Brooklyn Brine.
Cheers. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.